to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levionier. And coming up in this hour, adventure. Later in the hour, we enjoy Escape with the story Red Wine from 1949. Right now, it's Dangerous Assignment, bringing Steve Mitchell to Portugal in an NBC broadcast from March 25th, 1953. Our star is movie actor Brian Dunleavy.
Dangerous Assignment. Transcribed starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though, trouble, but when I walk into the commissioner's office, I can't realize that this assignment's going to wind up with me trying to decide whether I'd rather get run over or shot. Morning, Commissioner. You sent for me?
Steve, I'm putting you on the trail of a young lady.
Hey, this must be my lucky day.
A very beautiful lady, I might add. Here's her picture.
This gets better as it goes along. Tell me more, Commissioner.
Her name is Antonina Aguirre. She entered the United States illegally after the war, was picked up by immigration officials a short time ago, and is now being sent back to Portugal. At the moment, she's on a boat in the mid-Atlantic, bound for Lisbon.
So I'll be there when the boat docks, huh? Why?
You're to follow her, Steve. Find out what she's up to.
What makes you think she's up to anything?
Yesterday, the immigration department made a rather puzzling discovery, Steve. They learned that the anonymous tip they had received, the one that led to the girl's arrest, had been set up by the girl herself.
Why?
We got to work on it right away and found out that she'd been seen on several occasions with a man named Luis Cortese, a man who has, from time to time, been connected with several subversive groups in this country. Get over there, Steve. Pick up Antonina Aguirre's trail at a boat docks in Lisbon and find out what this maneuver is all about. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
National Broadcasting Company is presenting Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Dunleavy in the role of Steve Mitchell, colorful two-fisted government agent. At all those places of the world where danger and intrigue walk hand in hand, there you will find Steve Mitchell on another Dangerous Assignment. Thursday evening brings a host of entertainment over this NBC radio station. There's comedy fun with the Andersons when Robert Young portrays the title role on Father Knows Best. Roy Rogers brings Western music and adventure from the Double R Bar Ranch in Paradise Valley. Ralph Edwards adds to the fun with an hilarious laugh-filled session of Truth or Consequences. And Eddie Cantor presents another edition of his show business show. Judy Canova stars in a fun-packed adventure at Cactus Junction. And the entire evening bubbles over with wonderful radio entertainment. So make it a date to hear all of these enjoyable programs every Thursday night on most NBC stations.
Sure, I've got my assignment. Get over to Portugal and meet a certain boat when it docks at Lisbon. All I have to do is keep my eye on a passenger named Antonina Aguirre and find out why she's had herself deported from the U.S. and what her tie-in is with the subversive groups in this country. It's late Friday afternoon when my plane lands and I hustle over to the docks. The boat pulls in a couple of hours later. I wait around another 15 minutes, and then I spot Antonina trotting down the gangway. Two representatives of the law meet her, and there's a brief conference. Papers are signed, and finally she's sent on her way. An hour later, she's aboard a northbound train rolling out of Lisbon. I'm in the same car a few seats away.
Howdy, Pilgrim. Is this seat taken?
No, help yourself. Here, I'll move my coat.
Thank you. Yeah. Excuse me, I'll just put my bag up here on the rack and I step on your foot, neighbor. Mash your little piggies, did I? I'm sorry.
That's all right. Never use that foot anyway.
Sure does feel good to sit down, yes, sir. Yeah, you are my crowd and your pilgrim. Fat boy like me needs a lot of room, you know. Can I offer you a cigar?
Thanks, no.
Yeah, yes, sir. Always been a fat boy ever since I was knee-high to a stirrup back in Pertwee. Yeah. Only man I ever knew who was fatter, postman in the old hometown. He lost his job on account of it.
Oh?
Oh, yes, he was a fat one, he was. On hot days, he'd perspire so much that the steam would unglue all the letters.
Oh, fine.
Yeah. My name's Jessup, Sam Jessup. I travel in silks.
Sounds real cooling.
Hey, look at that pretty little senorita over yonder. One with a pink bonnet.
Yeah, I've sort of had my eye on her, too.
You have? Well, I tell you what, Pilgrim, I'll toss you for it.
No, you go ahead.
Well, there's the coat of the traveling man, you know. You saw her first.
I'll sign a release. Go ahead. Start crawling.
That's right decent of you, neighbor. Well, here I go.
There's an empty seat next to Antonina, and Jessup plops into it. He goes into his pitch, but the girl isn't paying too much attention. Finally, it's easy to see she's getting annoyed, which is just how I figured it. I decide it's time to make my play, so I walk over to them. Pardon me, miss.
Yes?
Is this man annoying you?
Well, now, see here, Pilgrim.
Is he, miss?
Yes, senor. He is annoying me.
In that case, Buster, you'd better be on your way.
Well, by jingles, if I don't beat all, I never...
On your feet, Pilgrim.
Well, I've been Pearl Harbor, that's what. That's the sneakiest attack I ever did.
Sure. Now move on, huh? Move.
Code of the traveling man don't mean a thing anymore. Not a thing.
Thank you, senor. It was very kind of you. Sometimes these Americans... Oh, I am sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I have met so many very fine people in your country.
Oh, you've been to America?
Yes. I'm on my way home now. I come from Coimbra, a town to the north of here.
Got a little lonesome for the old sights and familiar faces, huh?
No, it is not that. My father has become ill. Someone should care for him. But you, senor, you have been here long?
No, seems like I just stepped off the plane somehow. I'm here on business.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, I'd rather talk about the United States.
You've been to California? To Hollywood?
Hollywood, sure. A very good friend of mine lives there. Good old Darryl. Darryl Schwartz, he runs a meat market on Fairfax Avenue. Sweet fella. She wants to hear more about Hollywood, so I lean back and launch into a narrative that would have the California Chamber of Commerce drooling for a week. My narrative runs down about 10 miles later, and Antonina excuses herself to check on something in the baggage car.
Well, it's my Quisling friend, huh?
Oh, hello, Jessup.
Yeah, you're piling up points, huh? Getting along first rate with a little filly?
Looks that way. Not sore, are you?
Oh, I'm not one to hold a grudge, Pilgrim. As a matter of fact, I'm much obliged to you. Yes, sir, I admire your technique. I'm going to try it myself sometime. Hey, I say, the little filly ain't getting off here, is she?
No, she just went back to the baggage room to, Hey, wait a minute. This isn't Coimbra we're pulling into, is it?
No, town up ahead's called Novandas.
A regular stop?
Well, not unless somebody wants off. Why?
Excuse me, Jessup. I want to check on something. I hurry through the train towards the baggage car, and when I get there, the train has groaned to a stop. No sign of Antonina. I stick my head out the door and look down the tracks, and then I spot her running past the depot. I take off after her on the double. I lose sight of her as I sprint around the station platform. I'm pretty sure she's headed into town, so I do likewise. It's, well, after midnight, and the streets are deserted, all of which makes it easy for me to pick her up again, but it seems someone else has the same idea. A car up ahead suddenly sweeps around the corner. A gent jumps out and grabs Antonina.
Let me go. Please, let me go.
You heard the lady, Buster. Let's go.
Look out, senor, a knife.
I'm doing my best to make him drop the stiletto and still keep an eye on Antonina, who is now starting to back away down the street. That's why I didn't notice the guy who slips up behind me and jumps on my back. We all land in a heap on the sidewalk. I'm just getting to my feet when a size 12 foot catches me under the chin. I topple back, crash through a wooden railing, and drop into somebody's cellar. So soon.
I got away from them, hid and came back.
Who were those gorillas?
The one in the car I've not seen before, but the other one I saw a few times in America. He worked for a man named Cortese.
We already know quite a bit about Louis Cortese, Antonina.
You know my name?
Yeah, mine's Steve Mitchell. Here, you better take a look at my credentials.
Oh, I see.
First of all, why did you set yourself up for deportation?
To get away from Cortese. The errands he forced me to do.
What sort of errands?
He came to see me at the office where I worked 2 months ago. He said he had known of me for some time, that I had entered the country illegally. He requested my cooperation.
And if you refused, you would tip off the immigration boys, huh?
I was frightened. I did not want to leave America, so I agreed to do what he asked.
And that was to run an errand?
Yes. He gave me an envelope. I was to deliver that envelope at 11 o'clock that night to a man who would be waiting on a street corner about 2 miles from my apartment. 2 days later, Cortese contacted me again. Another envelope, but a different street corner.
How many envelopes did you deliver?
2. The third one was stolen from me.
Stolen?
I'd never seen the man before. I was waiting at the corner one night when he jumped out of the shadows, ripped the purse out of my hands. I struggled with him, and then a passerby heard my cries and rushed up. The man got away. A few moments later, the police arrived.
I see. What did Cortese have to say about that?
Oh, he was furious. He questioned me for a long time. Wanted to know about the man who had come to my rescue, what his name was. He seemed to think the man was implicated.
What was this passerby's name, do you remember?
Yes, Eduardo Podesta.
About these envelopes you carried, did you ever look into them?
Yes, the last one. The envelope contained several x-rays.
X-rays? X-rays of what?
Teeth.
Teeth? Are you sure?
Positive.
Oh, brother. Just when all this was beginning to make sense, some guy has to shove his choppers into the act.
Now, back to Dangerous Assignment. And Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell.
Hold it.
They are coming back for us.
Look, get up the stairs, then out to their car and wait. They'll probably come down the outside stairs.
All right, but how about you?
I'll think of... Wait, here's an empty wine bottle. Go on, hurry.
Be careful, Steve. Be careful.
Yeah, yeah. Hold it, Buster. Feel my gun in your back?
See?
Blow you wide open if you try anything now. Drop your gun, quick. Kick it to one side. Okay, now call your buddy. Tell him to get down here. You heard me call him.
Rodriguez!
Si? What is it?
Come down here!
What is it, Jose? You told me to stay in the car.
It's a trap.
What?
You're so right. You have a gun. It is a bottle.
Sure is. Have a drink.
Hurry, Steve, hurry!
Okay, let's go. Take a few assorted back streets out of the village, then head for Tony's hometown, Coimbra. It's morning when we arrive. She directs me to the house of her uncle, Sebastian. It's quite a layout. He's apparently the money man of the family, and he's been taking care of her sick father.
Ah, Tony, it's so good to see you.
Father's better?
Of course, of course. He's gotten the best of care.
I do not know how to thank you.
For my own brother, I need thanks? No, Tony. I'm the one to say thanks to Senior Mitchell for getting you home to us.
Well, as long as things are pretty much in order on this end, I think I'd better be getting along.
What? No. I insist you join the family for breakfast. You have met none of them.
Thanks, but I want to talk to the authorities. Could you tell me where the police station is, Sebastian?
Of course. It's on the south side of the plaza in the center of town. Police Captain Rio's in charge.
That Antonina actually arranged for her own deportation back here to Portugal?
That's right, Captain Rios. She figured she might as well. The outfit which was using her kept holding it over her head, and she didn't want to do any more of their dirty work for them.
Yes. But I do not understand why this envelope they give her to deliver contained dental x-rays.
You and me both, Captain. Also, I don't understand why they tried to grab her back in that village.
Mm. Well, in any event, you have delivered her safely home now. Your job is finished.
I'm afraid not, Captain Rios. I've got to find out what's behind all this. You see, we know that the gent bossing the deal is head of a recognized subversive group back in the United States. Now, my job is to find out what he's up to.
I see. What will be your next step, then?
There, you've got me. They probably won't try to grab her again as long as she's with the rest of her family at her Uncle Sebastian's. Wait a minute. Maybe that's the answer.
What is?
Captain, if Tony and her uncle will cooperate, I'd like to set up a little trap.
What do you suggest may endanger Tony's life?
I don't think so, Sebastian. Look, Captain Rios has arranged for an empty apartment in town. There's a garage in the basement, and he and a police sergeant are waiting in the apartment.
The plan is for you to take me there?
Yeah, real conspicuous-like, so anybody can follow us. Once inside, the police sergeant takes you down the back stairs to the basement and drives you back here. I'll leave by the front entrance and then double around the block and in the back. Rios and I will wait in the apartment and see who turns up.
I don't know. Tony is safe here with her family. To help you in your plan, she might not be safe.
Look, Sebastian, this is our best chance of luring this outfit into the open so we can grab them, find out what's behind it, and put them out of business. Tony won't really be safe until we do.
But,
Please, Uncle Sebastian, I am willing.
Yeah. Very well. You have my permission.
It's nightfall when I drive Tony to the apartment. Captain Rios and the sergeant are waiting inside in the dark. We turn on the lights, and Tony walks back and forth in front of the window a couple of times. Then the sergeant sneaks her down the back stairs. I leave by the front and double around the block to the back. Rios and I wait. Pretty soon we hear steps in the hall. Someone fumbling at the door. We jerk it open.
Mitch, it's my sergeant.
Hey, he's been beat up. Our plan's gone cockeyed.
And they've got the girl.
We head for the police station and throw out a dragnet. Then half an hour later...
Hello, Steve.
Tony.
Are you all right?
Yes.
What happened?
When the sergeant took me to the basement, he was attacked suddenly. A man grabbed him and forced me into the car. He drove me to an alley and questioned me. Then he released me.
What?
Yes, just like that.
What did he ask you?
He wanted to know how much I had told the police. I said I had told them it was dental x-rays in the envelope I was to deliver back to the United States. And then he told me to get out of the car and drove off.
Well, Mitchell, what do you make of that? Huh?
The only thing I make of it is that I'm more in the dark than ever. At this point, it looks like the outfit I'm bucking is pretty sure of itself. I decide to put through a transatlantic phone call... I sure am, Commissioner. Cortez's outfit's up to something, but I don't know what. It doesn't make sense. They make Tony deliver an envelope of dental x-rays to a guy on a street corner.
Dental x-rays?
That's right. On her way, a guy tries to grab the envelope. A passerby comes to her rescue. A guy named Podesta, I think. Yeah, Eduardo Podesta. She continues on her way and delivers...
Wait a minute. This passerby. Did you say Eduardo Podesta?
Yeah. Why, the name ring a bell?
A fire alarm. A very important Italian diplomat has spent 3 weeks in this country incognito for some secret talk. He's been traveling under the name Eduardo Podesta.
Oh, brother, where is he now?
En route back to Europe. As a matter of fact, his plane's due at Lisbon in less than an hour. From there, he'll continue by boat to Italy.
Commissioner, this deal just started adding up at last. I'll check with you later. How fast can I get to Lisbon, Captain Rios?
The army can fly you there in about 40 minutes.
Good.
Sergeant, get me Colonel Menta on the telephone, please, sir. And now, Mitchell, suppose you tell me what this is all about. Huh?
The dental x-rays were just a smokescreen. The whole deal was rigged so they could find out the name an Italian diplomat was traveling under. That way they could find out what plane he was on and grab him on the way home.
You mean they had one of their own men arranged to attack her when Podesta was in the vicinity?
Sure. He must have had a habit of taking walks at night. Their timing was perfect. He gave his name to the policeman. Tony overheard it. And later, when they questioned her, she told them the name. Now they're probably waiting in Lisbon for his plane to land, but you know something? They're going to have company. On our plane to Lisbon, we radio ahead and start the ball rolling. By the time we get there, everything's in order, according to Colonel Menta, who's in charge of the arrangements.
The civilian plane carrying Podesta is landing now. He has been alerted by radio. That black sedan will pick him up at the plane, then drive into the tree-lined road at the edge of the field. You will be waiting there. You will take Podesta's place in the car. I will pick up Podesta. You and your driver will be armed. The rest is up to you.
I go over to the tree-lined road. So far, everything's just dandy. That is, until I feel a gun barrel in my back.
Stand still, Mitchell.
What? Uncle Sebastian?
Yes.
So you're the ringleader. Sure, that explains how the outfit knew that Tony was an illegal entry. You tipped them off so they could use her.
Exactly.
Some uncle.
Huh.
That should be Podesta's car approaching now. Step out and flag it down. I want his briefcase. That will tell us what went on in those secret talks. Move.
Sebastian stays in the trees, his gun pointed at me. I step out onto the road. The driver sees me and slows down. Suddenly, I motion him on.
Stop it! Keep going!
The car roars ahead. I dive across the road in front of it just in time. Sebastian's taken by surprise. After it roars by, he runs out onto the road, and I meet him halfway.
Mitchell, you...
I'll take the gun. Thanks. Well, Sebastian, looks like you and your buddies just aren't going to get a peek at that little briefcase.
You fool. To throw yourself across in front of an automobile that way.
That's nothing. Back home, we've got thousands of people who can do that.
A nation of madmen.
Could be, but we call them pedestrians. Next week, the Caribbean, a race that turns into a dead heat.
And that will be Steve Mitchell's dangerous assignment next week. Featured in tonight's cast were Bill Conrad, Virginia Gregg, Harry Bartell, Tony Barrett, Ralph Moody, John Storm speaking.
Dangerous Assignment on Tuned to Yesterday from March 25th, 1953 on NBC. In that same year, star Brian Dunleavy was appearing in the motion picture Woman They Almost Lynched with Audrey Totter, Joan Leslie, and John Lund, who at one time was yours truly Johnny Dollar on the air. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now a tale of escape called Red Wine, written by Lawrence Blockman and heard on CBS Radio on August 11, 1949, starring Willard Waterman, Larry Dobkin, Robert Boone, and Vic Perrin.
You are with three men on a jungle plantation on the rubber coast of Borneo. You know that one of the men is a desperate criminal whom you've come to arrest, but you don't know which one. You have to find him before he can save himself by killing you.
We offer you Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Tonight, we escape to a Borneo jungle in a tantalizing search for a murderer, as L.G. Blockman told it in his famous story, Red Wine.
As the rusty little tramp freighter bumped against the rickety wharf, I dropped from the rail onto the planking and for the first time felt the humid heat roll out of the jungle like steam from the back door of a Turkish bath. I'd come a long way. 6 days before, I'd stepped off a float in San Francisco Bay, climbed aboard a Pan American clipper headed for the South Pacific. 2 days later, I'd boarded the mailboat in Batavia. And now, Tan Yong Samar, sweltering and half forgotten, last outpost on the rubber coast of Borneo. Yes, a long journey. But here would now mark the end of it. I'd come to arrest a murderer. I crossed the beach and walked up the path of crushed shells leading to a low bungalow at the edge of the jungle. The freighter would lie at the wharf for 4 hours, plenty of time for me to get the thing over with and be back aboard when she sailed. I was expecting danger, of course, but no real trouble. I'd done jobs like this before, so I stepped confidently up on the porch and met Herr Kurt, controller of the Tan Yong Samar district.
Yeah, I am Herr Kurt, the controller. What is it I can do for you?
I have a letter of introduction here from the Governor General. Here you are.
Yeah. Mr. Paul Vanier from the United States.
The Governor promised me your cooperation.
So I see. Cooperation? That's good. But he doesn't say cooperation in what?
Well, I've come here after a killer, Mr. Kurt.
Oh, Dayaks maybe? Headhunters?
No, this one's a civilized killer, an American. Wanted in San Francisco for murdering his wife. His name is Jerome Steeks.
Oh, I see. Won't you sit down, Mr. Vanier?
Yes, thank you.
Won't Kim? Bow a coffee.
That's one, but I bring right away.
We will have coffee in a moment.
Oh, that's nice of you, but maybe I'd better pick this guy up first. I'd hate to miss the boat and have to lay over 5 days.
You are acquainted with this Steeks, Mr. Vanier?
No, I've never seen him.
But you do have photographs.
No, I'm afraid not. This was a very clever killer. He apparently took great pains to see that he was never photographed. He carefully eliminated all the fingerprints as well. What are you driving at, Mr. Kirk?
Well, simply this. There is no one in my district by the name of Steeks.
Oh, no, of course not. He wouldn't be using his own name. There is an American here, though, isn't there?
Three of them, Mr. Vanier. Employed as foreman on the Cotter rubber plantation.
According to my information, Steeks came here from Batavia about 6 months ago.
We all arrived 6 months ago on the same boat. The Cotter Company is just going back into operation.
I see. Well, according to the people who've seen him, Jerome Steeks is a man about 35 years old, of medium height and slight build, pale complexion with black hair and mustache.
Amazing. Any one of these men might fit the description, except that all are clean-shaven and heavily tanned from tropical sun. Furthermore, Mr. Vanier, all three of the men have light blonde hair.
A coffee should have seen it, Mr.
Good. Pour out 2 cups, Wong. I'll have Wong bring your baggage up from the wharf, Mr. Vanier.
Yeah, thank you, Wong.
It appears your business may take a little longer than 4 hours.
I'm certain of the information I got in Batavia. I know the man's here.
Then the problem resolves itself into a matter of identification. Bully piggy, Zikarang.
No, an hour's talk with the three of them ought to do that.
I doubt it, Mr. Vanier. The swamps here at Tanjung Samar are infested with fever. It's always hot, like now. And the jungles back there swarm with long-tailed true snakes and deadly cobras. In the rivers, crocodiles.
So?
Men rarely come here unless they're running away from something, trying to lose their past. I think you'll find all three men have manufactured stories. So, how is one to choose?
Well, I,
Moreover, according to this letter, I'm authorized by the governor to assist you in arresting and extraditing Jerome Steeks. One man, not three.
So it's up to me, huh?
Oh, do not misunderstand me, Mr. Vanier. I will cooperate with you in every way. But I think it will be a very hard thing to identify this man you have never seen, when he doesn't wish to be identified.
I don't know. Sometimes it's easier to identify a man from his personality than from his physical appearance.
And the personality of this man Steeks is something out of the ordinary?
Yeah, for a foreman on a rubber plantation, yes. Yeah, I doubt if all three of these men can be aristocrats. And in a sense, that's what Steeks is, a cosmopolitan. Lived all over the world, always associating with top society. He's a lover of fine foods and wine, speaks French and German fluently. He's a gourmet, a bon vivant, a man of perfect taste in clothes and manners.
And a murderer.
Yes, and a murderer.
When the three men return from the clearing this evening, I shall be happy to introduce you to them, though it's quite probable they are aware of your identity already.
What do you mean?
Jungle Grapevine. Before you stepped off the wharf, my houseboat told me that you were a detective. Undoubtedly, the same information has reached the clearings by now.
I see. So, in other words, the murderer probably knows who I am and what I'm here for. But I haven't the slightest idea who he is, huh?
Exactly. It's quite an interesting thought, isn't it? More coffee, Mr. Vanier? Mr. Vanier? I would like you to meet Mr. Doran.
Hi, Mr. Vanier.
And this is Mr. Wilmerding.
Pleasure, Mr. Vanier.
I'll save you the trouble, Kurt. My name's Prale. Glad to meet you.
Same here, Mr. Prale.
You might as well drop that mister. We don't use it much around here. I'm Prale, that's Doran, and Wilmerding, and you're Vanier, if it's all the same to you.
Sure, Prale. Why not?
Now, if you gentlemen will excuse me, I have a number of things to do. Bring Mr. Vanier to my bungalow for dinner. We'll celebrate having a guest at Tanjung Samar.
Oh, okay, sure. We'll see you.
Well, Herr Kurt tells me all three of you are Americans.
Well, I don't know whether I'm still one or not. Haven't been to the States in 7 years.
7 years, huh? Then you're an old-timer here, Duran.
Oh, not here, Australian.
Oh, don't let Duran get started, Veneer. He'll spend 2 hours telling you how he lost his shirt trying to raise sheep down under.
Well, if I had either money or sense, I wouldn't have come to this stinking hole.
Oh, I wouldn't say you fellas had it too rough. I've been noticing those empty bottles there on the shelf.
What do you mean, Veneer?
Well, here, Piper Heidsieck, 1936. That's good champagne. You boys are living like gourmets. Connoisseurs.
Oh, you're overrating us, Veneer. Those empty bottles were already here when he came. Just never got around to throwing them out.
Prale here is the only connoisseur in the bunch. He can tell you anything you want to know about wine.
Yeah, or about anything.
Oh, dry up. Just because a guy happens to know a little more than somebody else, there's no reason to keep riding him all the time.
I wish you knew some way to make ice. I'm getting plenty fed up with warm beer day in, day out.
Yes, that would get pretty tiresome. I think I'd switch to Chambertin or Chablis or something.
Hmm? Come again?
Well, Wilmerding, I didn't necessarily mean those in particular, but there are quite a number of wines that are even better warm than they are chilled.
You're in the wrong place, chum. We wouldn't know what to do with them if we had them. This is strictly a beer and gin crowd.
Yeah, there'd be no kick on that if we had some ice to go with it. Oh, what I wouldn't give for a cold, frosty
bottle. Oh, relax, Wilmerding. You make me thirsty.
Oh.
What do you say to some music, huh?
Oh, music? Does one of you play some instrument?
Sure, Prale. He's terrific on that phonograph over there in the corner. Only trouble is he thinks 3 o'clock in the morning is the greatest song ever written.
Well, I can see that leading to quite an argument, Duran, particularly if you're a lover of the classics.
Oh, no. I don't go for that long hair stuff. But I would like to hear a fast number once in a while. It's less than 10 years old.
Yeah, you ought to see this collection Prale dragged up here from Batavia. Strictly from the gay 90s.
Prale, you don't by any chance have a number called Il y a un maîtrier dans cette maison?
What's that, some Italian opera?
No, it's French, approximately.
Well, come on, Prale, translate it for us. You claim to be an expert on the French language.
Well, it's worded kind of funny. It's like poetry.
Oh, sure.
That last word, though, that maison, that means house, I know that.
That's too bad. I thought maybe Jerome Steex might translate it.
Huh?
It refers to him, of course.
Steaks.
What are you talking about?
A sentence reads, there's a murderer in this house.
Well, so you're finally coming out in the open, huh?
Yeah, we heard you were a detective.
Yeah, that's right. So what about it, Steaks? You want to give up now or try to go on with your act?
Wait a second, Vernier. I get it now. You're after some killer you've never seen named Steaks, and you figure one of us is it, huh?
Yeah, that's right, Prale.
Then the guy you're after is Wilmerding.
Are you crazy?
Who ever heard anybody with a name like Wilmerding unless they made it up?
Made up nothing. I got a passport to prove it. What are you trying to do, Prale? Turn attention away from yourself?
I got nothing to hide. It's either you or Duran.
What? Listen, you can leave me out of this right now. There's plenty of people in Australia that can tell you who I am.
Unfortunately, though, there's nobody in Tanyong Samar who can tell me for certain who any of you are. But one of you is a murderer. And by the time the boat gets back here, since I'm obviously not going to be able to leave with it when it sails in an hour, I'll know which one. Now, either I'm going to take Jerome Steeks back to San Francisco with me, or I'm going to kill him trying to. You can count on it. Well, what do you say we go on over to Kurt's bungalow and have dinner?
That's Wilmerding's room there. Duran sleeps here, and Prale on down at the end.
Oh, yes.
And this is the guest room. At least, the only guest room that's usable at the present.
Yeah, it looks all right.
Well, it's yours for the time you're here, Mr. Veneer.
Do all of these rooms open out onto the porch?
Yes, the veranda, as we call it.
And there's no way to lock this door, I suppose.
Unfortunately, no. And anyway, the windows are covered only by mosquito netting. It makes another interesting situation, does it not?
Yeah, I suppose interesting is the word for it.
I assume, Mr. Veneer, that you have not been able to identify your man by his personality.
No, whichever one is Steeks is putting on an awfully good act.
Most likely they're all acting to a greater or lesser extent, which of course makes your problem exceedingly difficult.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Kurt. You did say a man rarely came here unless he wanted to lose his past. And yet, you're here.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. But then, I am only a servant of the government and have little choice where I am sent.
Well, good night, Mr. Vanier.
I sat there in the lamplight for a long time after Kurt left, trying to figure things out and getting nowhere. Gradually, the night breeze brought the smell of the jungle into the room. Rich, exotic, fragrant as a midnight orchid, as disturbing as the scent of danger. Or maybe it was danger itself I was smelling. The heavy knife missed my throat by 2 inches, thudded into a bamboo partition and stuck there, quivering. I dropped down on the floor and slid my .38 out of its holster. I could hear nothing but the rustle of palm thatch along the eaves, low creaks from the pilings underneath the bungalow, and the soft night sounds from the jungle. Finally, I slipped my shoes off, pulled the knife out of the wall and dropped it in my pocket, moved to the door and stepped quietly out into the veranda. It was empty. Across the railing, the fringe of undergrowth was dappled in silver moonlight, and nothing moved. I paused quickly at the three doors, and from each heard the sound of snoring. One of the men was faking, but which one? I'd reached the end of the porch when my eye caught a slight movement in a banana clump a few yards from the steps. Someone was hiding there. I moved swiftly, holding the gun ready, and came within a few feet before I could make out a shape in red and white sarong. And shape was right, complete with dark, tumbled curls and a flower behind one ear. It was a girl.
Please, Tuan, the gun. You are going to shoot me?
No. Relax, honey. I was looking for somebody else.
And now you have found Nilana, so you are disappointed?
Ah, pleasantly surprised. Nilana, huh?
In your language, it means flower of love.
It's a perfect fit. Are you, blooming out here all alone?
I do not understand, Tuan.
I mean, did you see anybody moving around up there on the veranda a while ago?
Only you, Tuan. I became frightened and ran to hide.
Frightened? Why?
I should not be here. At night, I mean. Let us talk of something else.
All right, Nilana. The moon, for instance?
Oh, yes. Look. Is it not big and soft and warm?
Yeah, all of that.
Tuan, you like Nilana, perhaps?
Definitely.
Why do we not go somewhere else? Along the beach, perhaps? You would like that?
Well,
I'm afraid Mr. Vanier is too serious-minded for such things, Nilana.
Vanier?
Well, Mr. Kurt, join us, won't you?
Thank you. Nilana, go to the bungalow at once.
Yes, Vanier, I go. I go immediately.
She has no business being out alone at night. But, Mr. Vanier, is something wrong with your room? Is it not comfortable?
It was, until this flew in through the window.
A knife?
Yeah, a throwing knife. You ever see it before?
Oh, yeah. It is one of the collection there in the bungalow. The three Americans throw them at targets every evening and wager on the results. I believe Mr. Durant taught the other two.
Hey, what about you, Mr. Kurt? Do you ever bet with them?
It would be too easy. Watch.
Yeah.
I learned to throw a knife in Java many years ago.
And Nilana, I suppose she's an expert at it, too.
Nilana knows nothing of knives. Her greatest accomplishment is that of making friends too easily.
I see. Just who is she, anyway? She live here?
Yeah, she lives here. She is my wife.
Your wife?
Exactly. My wife. Good night, Mr. Vanier.
I stood there in the moonlight and watched him walk toward his bungalow. My simple task was fast becoming involved. When I finally turned in that night, I undressed in the dark, pushed the bed up to block the door and propped a chair against the windowsill, and lay down on the floor. I kept trying to fit some theory together to account for the things that had happened. When I drifted off to sleep, I was no nearer any answer than before. I woke up with the first light of dawn, and for a full minute was ready to predict a peaceful day. And I turned my head slightly and saw it. On the floor, against the wall, 18 inches from my left hand, its eyes opening and unmoving, lay a long tail, one of the deadliest snakes in Borneo. Cold sweat broke out on my forehead, ran into the corners of my eyes. Not daring to make any sudden move, I slid my right hand slowly up behind me
Found my gun under the pillow. The snake moved slightly, and I froze for one long minute. Carefully, I brought the gun over until I had the ugly head centered above the foresight. Then...
Who fired that shot?
I did, kid. In here.
Hey, Kurt, what's all the shooting about?
I thought I'd knock around. It's Mr. Vanille fired.
What's up, Duran?
Yeah, what was that noise?
I guess Vanille's doing a little target practicing. Come on, guys.
Just a minute. Just a minute. I'll let you in. Yeah,
there. Mr. Vanille, you all right?
Sure, Kurt. Come in. I had an early morning visitor. There on the floor.
A long tail. Did he bite you?
No, he didn't.
What the devil's all the racket about? Oh, a snake, eh? That's funny.
What's funny, Duran?
A long tail, Wilmerding. I just killed one here in my room.
Well, there's plenty of them around, but I never heard of one crawling into a room before.
I'm not sure it did crawl in. Got an idea it may have been dropped in through the mosquito netting there at the window.
Yeah? By whom?
By a guy named Jerome Steeks. You ever hear of him, Duran?
Oh, that again. Why don't you pick up Wilmerding? He's your man.
Oh, sure. I always carry a couple of snakes around in my pocket, just for luck.
Hey, what I want to know is who carries this around in their pocket, for luck.
Hey, that's one of our knives from the living room. We throw them at a target.
Yeah, I know. Only last night, I was the target.
Oh, then Prale's your boy. He's an expert. Wins every time we play.
Oh, dry up, Duran. One more crack like that.
Okay, relax. So nobody knows anything about these accidents. They just happen, huh? Well, here's a warning to whichever one of you is Steeks. The next time, you better cover yourself. I'm through being a clay pigeon. From now on, it's going to be a lot tougher. A whole lot tougher. That day passed, and the next, and I got exactly nowhere. On the third day, I managed to search the men's quarters and found nothing. Mainly, I'd hoped to find some kind of a bleaching agent. Steeks was described as having black hair, while all three of these men were blonde. Furthermore, I was convinced after 3 days of observation that all three were naturally blonde. Things didn't fit. They didn't add up. I saw Nalana several times, but had no chance to speak to her. When her Kurt was with me, she'd pass without a glance. But if I was alone, she'd manage a quick, provocative smile that sent shivers down my spine. By the fourth day, the tension among us was grown almost unbearable. The steamer was due the next evening on his return trip to Batavia. I needed a break of some kind, had to have one. And it came at dusk when I dropped in my room to change for dinner.
Close the door. Quick, Twan. Speak softly. It is I, Nalana.
Nalana, what in the devil are you doing here?
To see you, Twan. Does that make you unhappy?
No, it doesn't. But I doubt if Herr Kurt would think much of the idea.
Oh, he must not find out. But I wish to ask you something.
All right, honey, shoot.
It is true that you look for a man who has killed a woman in your United States?
Yes, that's right.
A man who now names himself by another name?
Yes. Nalana, do you know?
It is perhaps the same one who one night threw a knife at you?
Yes, I think so. Do you know who it is?
I saw the knife thrown to when I was outside by the edge of the...
Quiet.
It is someone?
Yeah, that's Herr Kurt. Going in the living room.
I'm very frightened, Twan. I must go.
No, wait. I've got to know what you're going to...
There's no time now. Tonight, when everyone sleeps, wait by the tall palm at the edge of the clearing. I will come.
All right. I'll be there.
Nalana has done foolish things, Twan. But tonight, she will fix it all good. You come.
I waited for a long time in the shadow by the palm tree. Watched the moonlight sift down through the shaggy fronds. But 2 hours passed, and she didn't come. Waiting there, though, in the jungle night, a plan began to form in my mind. Long shot true enough, but one with possibilities. It needed luck to work. But I'd come to the point where I had to count on a little luck. At any rate, I decided to start the ball rolling the next morning, after breakfast.
Now, wait a minute, Vernier. Let's get this straight.
Oh, I thought I put it straight enough, Duran. I said the hunt's off. Boat's due in tonight, and when it leaves, I go with it. You can relax.
Oh? What changed your mind? Our sweet dispositions?
Exactly the opposite, Wilmerding. Every one of you acts as guilty as the next one. And yet, in 5 days, I haven't been able to find a single characteristic in any of you that fits the description of Steeks. I don't think he's that good an actor. So, I'm going back to Batavia and pick up the trail there.
Well, at least you finally got some sense in your head and decided to believe what we told you the first day you were here.
Oh, no, no, Duran. I didn't say that. Now, I doubt very much if any of you guys is who he claims to be. I wouldn't be surprised if Duran, Wilmerding, and Prale are all phony names, but that's not my business. Now, I came here after Steaks. I've decided now I made a mistake, and that's that.
Oh, great. You come in here and push us around for a week and then decide it was all a mistake.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Prale. And I'm going to try to make up for it this evening. See, I'm throwing a dinner party at Herr Kurt's bungalow before the boat leaves tonight. You're all invited.
Well, now that's pretty decent of you, Vernier.
Yeah, I'll get some food and drinks from the captain as soon as he docks. If you're as fed up with Reistoffel and warm beer as I am, he'll be ready for a change.
Good.
Then it's all settled. And I can promise you at least two surprise dishes. Maybe three, if you care for
it. I beg your pardon, gentlemen.
Oh, Kurt, come in, come in.
I was wondering whether any of you had seen Alana this morning.
Not me.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why? What's wrong, Hickert?
I'm rather concerned about her, Mr. Vernier. She hasn't been home since early last night.
I had a couple of ideas about that myself. Ideas I wish I didn't have. As soon as the rest of the bunch went about their business, I began my own search for Nalana. It was nearly dusk before I found her. And then I said nothing about it to anyone. But sitting at the table that night while the dinner party moved along, I kept thinking how she'd never smile again. How she'd never walk in the moonlight again. Because somebody had cut her throat.
I know a story along the same lines, but I never heard that one before.
Oh, what a dinner. Boy, after 6 months on Reistoffel, I could go crazy over food like this.
Yeah, when you throw one, Vernier, you really throw it.
Save the credit, boys. This is only the beginning.
Beginning? Where can you go from here?
Yeah. Well, right now, for instance, roast boar.
Yeah.
All right, Wong, bring it over. Bring it over.
I promise I'll ride the way I bring it.
Look.
You like me put here for you to craft, Thomas?
No, I wonder if you'd mind carving, Hecate.
Not at all, Mr. Vernier. I shall be happy to. Place it here, Wong.
Boy, oh boy, I haven't had roast boar since Australia. You know, we used to go pig sticking all the time.
Even the smell's enough to drive you crazy.
Man, you said it, Prale.
You haven't seen anything yet. See, the boar's the main dish, so the two surprises go right along with it.
All right, Wong. Now bring it out.
That's all, Mr. Already I bring.
Careful now. Don't drop it. Yeah, thanks. Well, there you are.
What is it? Some kind of wine?
Not some kind. It's Chambertin, vintage 1911. Unquestionably one of the finest red wines that exists in the world today.
Holy smoke, where'd you get it?
I found out on the trip in. The captain of the steamer had a few bottles. Took a lot of talking to get one out of him, but here, I'll open it up, Wong. Have you the glasses?
Sire, Thomas, sir. It's already here on sideboard.
Good. Well, boys, you may go back to warm beer tomorrow, but you've got the best tonight. All right, Wong. Now, show him the second surprise.
Here's one big bucket.
Ice? Real honest-to-gosh cracked ice?
Boy, I haven't seen a chunk of ice for 6 months.
I thought you'd go for that one. All right, Wong. Serve the wine.
Say it, Mama, sir.
It was pretty amazing to find 1911 Chambertin and a little tramp freighter down here in the South Pacific. Stuff's so rare, it's hard to get at any price.
Maybe so, but that ice is what gets me.
Yeah, that's it, Wong. Dump plenty in mine. I want to freeze my tongue.
Hey, Wong, stop that. What the devil are you doing?
Wilmerding, what's the matter with
Why,
you?
Why, I mean...
You mean you're well aware of the fact that ice kills the bouquet of Chambertin? Isn't that it, Steaks?
Steaks? You mean Wilmerding is...
Once a gourmet, always a gourmet. Now, you were very clever, Wilmerding. Clever enough to keep your hair dyed black for years so you could become a natural blonde if you ever had to make a getaway. Clever enough to permit no photographs to be taken. But not clever enough to keep still and let me ruin a bottle of wine. Easy with those hands. Don't try reaching for a gun.
Let him reach for it, Mr. Vernier.
Ken, no. Put down that knife.
Look out, Vernier. He's going for his gun.
Good. I've warned that.
Help you!
Good Lord, Kurt, you've killed him.
I'm sorry you do not have a prisoner to take back with you, Mr. Vernier. But I, too, found Nalana's body. I knew you had been there. I saw your footprints.
I'm sorry, Kurt. Then
yes,
she had...
Nalana had been seeing Wilmerding. I'd guessed it was one of the three, and apparently she found out he was Steaks.
Yeah, I know. That was what she was going to tell me.
Only he didn't give her a chance.
She was young, Mr. Vanier. Foolish, perhaps. But I loved her very much.
Look, he knocked over that bottle of wine when he fell. It's pouring out all over the place.
Yeah, brother, what a mess.
Yeah, Duran. It's quite a mess. Only one thing, though. Not all of it is red wine.
Escape was directed this week by Richard Sandville, and tonight brought you Red Wine by L.G. Blockman, adapted for radio by Mort Lewis and Les Crutchfield, with Willard Waterman as Paul Vernier. Featured players were Robert Boone, Marion Richman, Larry Dobkin, Vic Perrin, Wilms Herbert, and Clark Gordon. Music is conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Next week...
You are standing at the doorway of a cabin on Cashier Creek. Up on the ridge, the bloodhounds have caught your scent. And between you and a fortune, between you and escape, yawn the white jaws of a deadly snake, a cottonmouth moccasin.
Next week, we escape with Irvin S. Cobb's ironic story, Snake Doctor. Be with us next week at the same time when once again we offer you Escape. Tip Corning speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Escape on Tuned to Yesterday from August 11th, 1949 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.